When a windstorm strikes, the insurance companies call it an act of God. Is that merely a figure of speech? After all, God is love. Therefore, God would not kill and injure people with hurricanes and tornadoes. Yet, despite this seeming contradiction in our view of God's nature, we are now experiencing a remarkable increase in the frequency and the severity of windstorms of all kinds. Along with this increase in windstorms, we are seeing an increase in the frequency and severity of rainstorms and floods. To understand what is causing this wild, violent weather, we first have to understand the jet stream, which is the flow of air that constantly circles around the globe. The jet stream is a continuous loop of air swirling eastward, horizontally cycling the globe. Lately, there has emerged a mysterious force, swooping down from the northern hemisphere, periodically yanking the jet stream off of its smooth easterly course and causing the jet stream to repeatedly drop troughs of Canadian air masses southward across the northern hemisphere. On the map, the outline of these multiple troughs is shaped like the letter W across the United States. Frigid northern air is rapidly pulled southward to collide sharply and explosively into existing warm air masses. Within the vertex of two U-shaped troughs, warm air is sucked up from the south. It's like pouring cold water into a hot frying pan. The result is all sorts of bizarre and violent weather reactions. Lightning storms, torrential rainstorms with consequent flooding, windstorms, tornadoes, and hurricanes, temperatures swinging wildly from warm to cold and cold to warm in one day or less. What is the genesis of this mysterious force pushing down from the northern hemisphere, causing the jet stream to ripple south and north like the cracking of a bullwhip? Each week on this program, Planet X in Bible Prophecy, we will explore beyond the Earth's stratosphere to discover the cause of these perilous weather phenomena and the earth-shaking geological phenomena that accompanies these windstorms, lightning storms, rainstorms, and yo-yo-like temperature swings.
In Greenfield, Tennessee, seven homes have been damaged or destroyed. In Ellettsville and Monroe County, Indiana, a report of debris falling from the sky near Bloomington. And there is tornado damage to homes in Martin County, Indiana. Welcome back to our ongoing coverage of severe weather across the middle of the country. We have a number of tornado watches now extending from Louisiana and Mississippi right up through Tennessee. That is where some of the worst of it is right now. More watches now through Kentucky, Indiana, and into Ohio. I want to focus first of all on northern Indiana. You can see a number of tornado warnings here right around Kokomo and Muncie. Tornado warnings here for Grant, Delaware, also for Madison and Tipton counties. They will be expiring very soon. And then farther southward, we get into southern Indiana, parts of Kentucky. Tornado warning now west of Louisville for DuBois County and also for Crawford County and near Bloomington, Indiana. Tornado warning now for Monroe County. These cells are generally moving towards the northeast at about 50 miles an hour, rapidly moving northeast. And folks, that is not going to give you time to outrun these tornadoes by car, so forget about that. If you get a tornado warning, you want to get into safe shelter immediately. Get to the lowest floor of your house, to an interior room. Put as much wall space between you and the tornado as you possibly can. And stay away from the windows. Look at all of the tornado warnings here in central parts of Tennessee. Unbelievable night here. We've got tornado warning for Davidson County, tornado warning to the north for Robertson County, Cheatham County, to the west Dixon County, and then into Humphreys County. Benton County. These are all tornado warnings, mostly Doppler radar indicated. Perry County, Hickman County. Then to the south, we have Lewis County, Maury County, and Lawrence County. And we have had a number of reports of damage in these areas. Folks, please take these tornado warnings very seriously. Do not wait until you hear something or you see something. If you get a tornado warning, take it seriously because, again, we've had a number of reports of damage already. And we take you farther southward. There is now a tornado warning for Lowndes County in Mississippi. That is right in here. And we've got a tornado on the ground. The public reporting a tornado located near North Ridge Road heading towards Caledonia, moving northeast at about 40 miles an hour. So this tornado has actually been spotted. Also some strong storms off towards the west here in central Mississippi and right along 55, Montgomery County, severe thunderstorm warning. Also severe thunderstorm warning for Humphreys County in central Mississippi.
This might look like your neighborhood bookstore, but look closely. These aren't ordinary books. These are survival manuals, pamphlets, magazines, and paperbacks on everything from self-defense and food storage to building a fortified bunker. They also carry supplies, dehydrated food, first aid kits, camouflage gear, and weapons.
Our customers are just middle-class individuals that are concerned, people that want to be prepared for whatever situation that is coming. I don't think they're crazies. I think they're smart. The individual that sits by and says, well, what will be, is not a smart individual.
The real horror of this is that we are not prepared. Today, in the Los Angeles area, or New York, or any area, 100 severely burned or injured people would saturate our ability to care for them properly. When we begin to think in terms of 100,000 or 500,000 or 1,000,000 grotesquely burned, injured, damaged people without blood supplies, without operating hospitals, without adequate medical help of any form, you begin to see the dimensions of the horror. It isn't all over as a terrible statistic in 10 minutes. It lingers for weeks. Dead and dying people are not much fun to watch, especially when they're your own, or your own children, or your own friends, and your own neighbors.
We're all concerned with the coming disasters. None of us know where we're going to be. Some of us do not know how to defend ourselves in an emergency. And I don't think things are getting better, so I think it's really right to be a survivalist. I wish more people would be. Then I wouldn't have to think about feeding them and worrying if they're going to kill me because they didn't put their food away.
I think the non-survivalist is probably the most dangerous person in the country, and there's a lot of them, because God knows what he's going to do when he runs out. What's he going to do when he runs out of food and he runs out of water? What's he going to do? Is he going to let his family starve?
In what looks like a typical middle-class neighborhood, survivalism has taken on a new dimension. It's called the Stell Community, and it's located 60 miles south of Chicago. The residents of Stell look ordinary enough, and they are, with one exception. Everyone here is convinced that the world is about to come to an end.
Over the next 20 years, basically, we are expecting that there will be an increase in the number of earthquakes that occur around the globe, as well as an increase in volcanic activity. And that will gradually...
Tim Wilhelm is a former Ohio school teacher who now heads the Stell Community's Office of Technology.
Also, along with seismic activity, we also are expecting probable changes in climate as well as accompanying economic problems that would be worldwide.
But Stell is prepared. Its population is only 125, but it has its own water purification plant, a facility that uses corn, which they grow, to produce ethanol, a substitute for gasoline, and a manufacturing plant, enabling Stell to be almost completely self-sufficient.
The reason we are taking the steps we're taking to deal with what we see, again, as a probable future, is that if it does happen and no one takes steps to survive or carry through this event, man will basically revert to a Stone Age existence.
A lot of people think we have a lot different outlook than they do. Really, the only difference is that we have a mission from God. He set us aside for this purpose, and this is our whole purpose in being here. All of what we're doing is to prepare for what's coming, and we're just trying to establish this refuge for God's people during this time of trouble. For 6,000 years, the misrule of man has corrupted the earth, and God is about at this time to bring in his kingdom, wherein righteousness shall reign. And as the scripture has said, the righteous shall tread on the ashes of the wicked.
Amen. Thank you, Lord.
I believe that this is a true promise and a true saying. But just because you've been called, don't stop. Just because you feel that you're in the chosen, don't stop. But continue on and be found faithful in the Lord.
Amen.
Some might accuse the residents of Zarephath Horeb of being extremists, radicals, even fanatics. But can you really blame them? Nearly the same sentiment is being echoed in houses of worship around the world.
I'm going to tell you that I used to think this was all bunk. But I have done some research, and I have come to see that the Bible does speak, and quite candidly, about the signs that are sure enough signs of the end of the world. Number one, the first thing that took place, he predicted it, the destruction of the temple. Sign number one, the end is coming. The second thing Jesus said to watch for is false messiahs. False messiahs. A sign of the end of the times. There are more false messiahs today right here in Los Angeles. People who say they are the chosen one. False messiahs. The end is coming. The third sign, Jesus said, increase of wars and rumors of wars. Wars and rumors of wars. The fulfillment of that is in our very presence. Then Jesus said something else. There shall be famines. It is a fact that 60% of the population of this world goes to bed hungry every night. The authorities tell us that 90% of the people of this earth will go to bed hungry in the year 2000. Another thing Jesus said would take place, earthquakes in unusual places. Earthquakes in places where you never thought there would be earthquakes. Last week, there was an earthquake in New Hampshire. Strange places are having earthquakes that never had them before. And then, Matthew 24:12, and because iniquity shall abound, the rise in crime, we're becoming an armed camp, and everybody is afraid, terrified. If you don't believe it, the security alarm system business has quadrupled in the last 3 years. Tremendous worry. The whole world is sensing the rise of iniquity. And that's just what Jesus said would happen. Now, let me tell you something. I believe that the signs of the ends of the world are all around us. I believe they have all been fulfilled, that it's all coming to a close. A French minister said one time, men will be in the streets, in busy commerce. Men will be in the shops, keeping their books and selling their wares. Children will be playing in the school grounds. And all of a sudden, the clouds will open, and the Christ of God will step and tower over the nations of business. And he'll say, gentlemen, it's closing time. It's closing time.
And I will give portents in the heavens and on the earth, blood and fire and columns of smoke. The sun shall be turned to darkness, and the moon to blood, before the great and terrible day of the Lord comes. And the ground clave asunder that was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men. The fact of the earth shall quake at my presence, and the mountain shall be thrown down. The cliff shall fall, and every wall shall tumble to the ground. The 1980s have dawned with a sweeping worldwide increase in violent geologic activity and extreme weather conditions, a cycle of destruction that could lead to greater and greater devastation in the years ahead. How severe will it be? Scientists are reluctant to make specific predictions, but some individuals possess startling visions of what the future holds.
I do see dramatic changes in the Earth in the next 20 years.
Her name is Clarissa Bernhardt. They call her the Earthquake Lady. She has predicted with uncanny accuracy the times, locations, and magnitudes of more than 30 earthquakes throughout the world.
I see the San Francisco Bay becoming an inland sea. And up and down the West Coast, a lot of volcanoes becoming active again. Flurries of earthquakes, of course, which do accompany volcanic activity. The East Coast will have changes also, but I see more in the western part as being the most dramatic by the turn of the century. The rest of the world will find there is increased activity. There'll be earthquakes in places that have not been earthquakes before.
Clarissa Bernhardt is not alone. Dozens of psychics alive today, many of those whose predictions were recorded in the past, share visions of major earth disturbances beginning in the early 1980s and continuing to the end of the century. This is what they see.
Shortly after the Grand Alignment, psychics see a flurry of earthquake activity throughout the world, in the United States, Japan, the Middle East, and China. The results will be devastating. Nearly half of California will be reclaimed by the sea. Tidal waves will sweep through India and major portions of the Far East. Earthquake and volcano-related catastrophes will continue for many years. One clairvoyant has seen more than 400 million people wiped out by the year 1990. Plague and famine will become worldwide occurrences. Hellish temperatures will persist for months on end. And the winters will be worse. Record-breaking sub-zero temperatures and Arctic-like blizzards will immobilize cities for months at a time. The harsh winters of the early 1980s will seem mild by comparison.
Psychics presented a very terrifying picture of the future. They talked about how over the next 20 or 30 years, the Earth would be hit by a number of repeated volcanic eruptions,
earthquakes, tidal waves set in motion. It was really horrifying what they were portraying. I was very doubtful about the whole thing, but when I started to look at the information in the various areas they had singled out, when I started to look at the geological maps, the tectonic maps, the heat flow maps, I was very surprised at the number of matchups and the number of things that said these areas were threatened areas, were weak areas, and had the potential of this kind of change.
Well, one of the reasons why I asked you to come on, because like I say, much of the information that's in the book is talking about these events. We believe that the Bible talks about it. For instance, the Bible said there'll be signs in the sun, the moon, the stars. It says upon the earth there'll be distress of nations. It says the waves and the seas will be roaring. It says men's hearts will fail them for fear as they look at those things that are coming upon the face of the earth. Well, this is one of those events that seems to fit that biblical description. Just this talking about it can put fearfulness in people's heart, because which way are you going to go? And then the Bible also talks about up to two-thirds of the population of the world being destroyed by volcanic eruptions and by natural things that are beyond natural, so to speak. So that's one of the reasons why we talk about this. Has this planet been sighted? Have they seen the planet?
The United States government, NASA, sent up a infrared astronomical satellite in the early 80s, knowing that this planet was there because of the long history of the outer planets being perturbed. And in fact, they sent up this satellite towards the direction of Orion constellation and found Planet X. They triangulated the sighting. And then the chief scientist, on December 30th, 1983, announced this to six dailies. It made the front page of the Washington Post on, like I said, December 30th, 1983, that they had found it. And then these, what I call them, controllers that control the major media and NASA and the economies of the world decided that this information wasn't what they wanted out there for people to think about because of the rich history and the archaeology. They may just put it together, and this would, of course, change the society. We know it probably collapse the economy of the world, because who would want to invest in stocks if they knew that when this planet passes, it was going to basically take this civilization out. So they decided to hide it, but that record stands. They found it back then, and then I suppose they did a fairly good job of keeping it under wraps until the beginning of 2001, when normal observatories could begin to spot it. I know I've gotten a call from a well-to-do businessman, a Canadian that lives in Germany, that he went searching for some concrete information about this, because he has a colleague, a 66-year-old physicist professor, that had told him, he attended a meeting in Russia of a group of scientists that were talking about this incoming planet. So that wasn't enough for him, because, you know, he was going to affect the lives of all the people that were employed by him before he made the decision to get ready for this. So he went and he was going to contract out a large observatory in St. Petersburg, Russia, to look for this. And he talked to the man in charge of new planets there, and he said, listen, there's no use to contract this out. We've been looking at it for 3 years. I'm very worried about the substantial damage it's going to do. So then he wanted to get the concrete data, a picture of this Planet X, and he started negotiating with him. And several weeks into the negotiations, they said, listen, we have to bow out of these negotiations, because we've been told that we have to be very careful about what we say. And that may have been because I let the initial information out on an e-group that is talking about this, a couple thousand people, and it's being monitored. So more than likely, if I would have kept quiet about, you know, this information, we would have had a good picture of it. But the powers that be are doing the best to keep this information from the public at this time. Although another guy called me from Canada the other day. He lives in Victoria, and he was simply thanking me for having received this book. He started telling me he called his local observatory. Apparently they have a large observatory there off the coast of Canada, in Victoria, the island of Victoria. And he started talking with an intern there, a woman who worked with the scientists, astronomers, and at one point he just casually asked her if they knew about Planet X. She volunteered the information. She said, yes, but we're not supposed to talk about it. And the scientists are arguing back and forth whether it'll cause substantial damage when it passes. So these are the kinds of indications I'm getting at this point. It is nothing that you could actually take to the bank. No one wants to go on record at this time, but if you're paying attention to what is happening to Earth at this time, the weather, the seismic activity, the earthquakes, you'll know well that something is coming.
The glass and stuff just went flying.
Yeah.
I laid down by a recliner in my living room, and that's what it took, about half of my house, and garage, my car, everything, boat and everything.
All right, that was just a few hours ago, the scene from western Kentucky, where a possible tornado came through, and as you can see, just really doing a ton of damage, destroying many homes there. And again, it continues at this hour for much of Kentucky, now over into central Kentucky, right down into middle Tennessee.
Now, severe weather is raking the middle of the country as we speak. Welcome back to our continuing coverage of severe weather here on the Weather Channel. I'm Carl Parker.
And let's tell you about the tornado watches we have posted. They include southern Michigan from Detroit down into Columbus, Ohio, and then all the way to the Gulf Coast. Here we're dealing with the threat of tornado watches, again, tornado watches encompassing much of Mississippi, all the way up into northern Alabama, taking you over into middle Tennessee. Then as we go northward, we're also seeing the threat of tornadoes up into Kentucky, Indiana, right over into Ohio. Ohio, it looks quiet now, but it is going to be going downhill. Let's talk more about these storms and the potential for severe weather around Nashville. Carl?
Yeah, we'll take you, first of all, into central parts of Indiana. We have had many reports of damage here, folks, so we do want you to take these warnings very seriously. Tornado warnings now to the south and west of Fort Wayne, Huntington County, and then also here for Wells County. These cells are generally moving northeast at about 45 to 55 miles per hour. Now we'll take you farther south and westward. Notice that the strong storms continue here right around Indianapolis and farther southward down into Bloomington. Severe thunderstorm warning now for Orange County, and then to the west of Louisville, Kentucky, we have a tornado warning for Crawford County. And then even farther southward down into central Tennessee. This is where the action has been in the last hour or so. We've got numerous tornado warnings now all around Nashville. Tornado warning for Dixon County. We also have a tornado warning for Davidson County, including the city of Nashville. This storm is going to be, rather, that's a severe thunderstorm warning for Davidson County in Nashville. And that cell will be moving towards the northeast at around 70 miles an hour, moving towards the northeast at about 45 miles an hour, producing winds in excess of 70 miles an hour. Tornado warning now for Williamson County, farther southward, also Maury County, and then Lewis County, and a tornado warning for Lawrence and Perry counties as well. So several counties in central Tennessee now under tornado warning, and one of these nasty cells now coming into Nashville. Severe weather expert Dr. Greg Forbes will have more on that in just a moment. And we also have tornado warnings now into western Alabama, Lamar County, and a tornado warning continuing for Lowndes County in east central Mississippi, where the public did spot a tornado in Columbus, near Columbus Air Force Base. We had winds that were in excess of 60 miles an hour. Jennifer?
All right, let's bring in Greg, our severe weather expert. Dr. Greg Forbes, again, let's talk about these storms. And, you know, how late do we think the severe weather is going to go this evening?
Well, I think, Jennifer, probably it's going to go until about midnight, and that means it'll push a little bit farther east than it is right now. Let's take a look at the graphic here. The eastern edge of this red area is about how far this should go by around that midnight time frame, or before it begins to get cool enough that this thing stabilizes. That gets to the Ohio-Pennsylvania border, almost the whole way across Kentucky into eastern Tennessee, almost to the Alabama-Georgia border, and then pretty close to the New Orleans area. Still a greatest threat area across middle Tennessee, up into parts of Kentucky, and even over into southwest Ohio, where we still have capability of getting some of those very strong tornadoes.
Yes, Mark Hazelwood, author of Blindsided, Planet X Passes in 2003, Earth Changes. Let's see what we got in store.
Hello.
Hey, Mark, how's it going? It's Jay Scott. How are you?
Real good.
Great, great. Tell everyone out there exactly what Planet X is for those folks that may be listening that have never heard about this before.
Planet X is a celestial body that is part of our solar system. It's a cross between a sun and a normal planet. Some will call it a brown dwarf. Instead of orbiting around just our sun, it orbits around our twin sun as well. Few are aware we have a twin sun in our system. The majority of solar systems out there are found to be binary. Ours is average in that regard. The only difference with our binary solar system is our twin is dark. And it
meaning it's dead, or?
Pardon me?
Meaning it's like a dead sun, or?
Well, if you want to call it dead, I mean, I'm of the opinion that everything's alive in some respect, but this just does not emit light.
Okay.
So if you want to call it dead, it has been called dead because it doesn't emit light.
Did it emit light at one point in time?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't tell you. Anyway, so this planet orbits around both of our suns in our binary solar system instead of one. So the orbit is rather long compared to the rest of the orbits that we're used to. It's approximately 3,600 years.
Okay.
It's also rather large compared to Earth. It's 4 to 5 times the size of Earth and 20 to 25 times its mass, and being kind of like a partial sun itself, like I said, a cross between a planet and a sun, it's a lot more dense. So it carries a lot more weight when it passes. It kind of bullies the planets around, so to speak.
And now you believe this is going to occur. This is going. This red dwarf,
yeah,
is going to pass between Earth and our sun.
That's correct.
Now the way that you, from what I've read from your book, the way that you describe the changes that this Planet X is going to bring to Earth is basically a shifting in the crust of the Earth's surface.
Well, I'd like to explain it a little better.
Okay.
To have a greater understanding. About a month and a half ago, I did a conference with a Professor James McKinney.
Yeah, familiar with him.
Master of Science, and he's been a professor at Cornell University, which is a university that a lot of the NASA people are sent through. And he knows what any PhD in astronomy knows, and astrophysics, and he's a nuclear physicist himself. Also, he's had, in fact, he's gone down to South America and been part of the archaeological dig, so he's got a broad-based knowledge of this subject.
Uh-huh.
And how he describes it is when a celestial body, a larger one, passes a smaller one, there is an electromagnetic gravitational wave, a wake of this planet, if you will, that hits the smaller one. And this happens at a distance. In fact, his term is action at a distance. This thing never strikes Earth, but it affects it greatly. So when this wave hits, you can imagine that the crust itself will experience tidal waves. And this will go through the entire mantle of the Earth, and when it's done, the crust will be in a different place relative to the poles. So that is what you call a shift.
That also brings up a point I wanted to mention about the polar ice caps melting and reforming what you describe in your book as a fast freeze. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah. The flash-frozen mastodons, the mammoths that have been found in Siberia, it's obvious that, you know, they were grazing in a tropical environment. They found, tropical flowers in their stomach, and the sled dogs, in fact, they've even sold this stuff on the open market for humans to eat once they uncovered this frozen meat. And if that meat even laid around for a day after it died,
it would be spoiled.
It wouldn't be good thousands of years later to consume. So where the crust stops, where the poles currently are, they're always steady relative to the sun, that will flash freeze. But you won't have the kind of ice buildup that you have now on the poles where the new poles stop. That will take quite a bit of time, but the cold itself will be very quick. It'll happen instantly.
What kind of degree shifts are we talking about here?
Well, you can imagine the difference between a tropical environment and the North and South Pole. Okay, so that would be the kind of difference. Now, if it shifts from a place that's close to the pole and then it becomes the pole, then of course the degree shift would be slightly less, but it could be that dramatic, like with these mastodons, these mammoths that were flash frozen.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this happens on a regular basis. Geological evidence is really rather clear.
And the government obviously doesn't want people to know, the controllers, as you call them, in the government, the few that do know about it, that control the financial aspects of the economy, don't want people to know about this.
Well, actually, they may be behind some of the disclosures that are happening now.
Guilty conscience?
Well, no, not necessarily. There's some there, of course. It's a combination of things. They may be saying that this date of spring 2003 themselves to set up kind of a cry of wolf and discredit anyone that's been identifying that.
I know you mentioned one of the hurricanes, I believe it was in Florida.
Yes.
Years ago, that the death count was basically lied about as far as how many bodies were actually discovered, how many were found. There was a lot of speculation on the part of the media as to, there's this many, and then, that and that's it. People that were in that area were basically forced out.
Yeah, Hurricane Andrew in 1992. I've talked to at least a dozen individuals, being a Floridian myself at one point. In fact, I just moved from there after 15 years. It is very clear for the people down there that there were thousands of deaths, that they cordoned off the area, they kept the news media away from the body pickup. It went on for weeks, picking up body parts and bodies, throwing them into refrigerator trucks, and then carrying them off to the dumps and burning them. And this just went on and on and on. In fact, I just, in the middle of a rewrite of my book, I really fleshed out that section with a lot more evidence to show how and why the powers that be do this kind of thing, this kind of cover-up. And it really mainly has to do with money. I mean, they want to keep the economy of Florida going down there and the tourism dollars. And if they found out that the nuclear plant down there was damaged and there was a nuclear incident and thousands of people that were killed during this hurricane, the tourism industry and the real estate market would dry up down there. the tourism industry and the real estate market would dry up down there.
Oh, yeah. A lot of big money down there, too.
Yeah, and the same way with this. This is a greater event, so they're doing the same thing. I mean, they're doing this with a lot more foresight because, you know, they've known about this thing for some 20 years. I mean, they actually made an announcement that they found it back at the end of 1983. Official government source, the chief scientist of the infrared astronomical satellite announced the six dailies at the time. Now, a week or so later, they tried to backtrack off of that disclosure and say it didn't happen or try to rewrite history, but, you know, that's something that they can't actually do, although they've done a good job at trying to keep this down.
What's going to happen when this planet passes, or when X passes our planet? What kind of death toll are we talking about here?
Well, you know, I don't want to get into a specific death toll right this minute. First of all, I want to say that if anyone's being exposed to this knowledge and they start digging into it and find out the truth of it, more than likely, they are getting this information for a reason. In other words, I'm going to talk from a spiritual basis here. If you understand this thing is coming, my strong suggestion to you is there is a reason for it, and you're going to be probably taking a good look at your entire life and possibly reevaluating everything in it to get ready for this. And part of that process, hopefully, is to draw to you through your own visualization or action the ability to survive this thing. Just getting away from the shoreline may be enough for some people, but each person is going to have, you know, a different experience depending on what they expect. But I would strongly suggest to stay positive about what is going to happen. Now, as far as the death toll goes, well, from a NASA source, they expect, you know, after the hour of the shift, that the waters will come in and slosh back and forth from the oceans on the shorelines, and 95% of the population of the world lives within 50 to 100 miles of the shorelines, and so they expect two-thirds of the population to perish.
Two-thirds of the population. That's a lot. What do these controllers or these people that do know about it, that do have the big money? Now, obviously NASA's not going to disclose it because it would have mass hysteria, lootings, murders that God you can imagine.
Well, there may be a certain point where they have to come clean. That's why all the people that are a naysaying Planet X, being directed from NASA, always state they are unconnected to NASA. They make that clear over and over. In fact, it is so prevalent when you understand this that you can identify who these people are in an instant just by those constant restating of being unconnected to NASA. Now, the reason NASA is not naysaying Planet X officially is because at a certain point they have to.
If you can see it in the sky, I mean.
Yeah, when it's very obvious to everyone that it's inbound, that'll be the point where they say, oh, look at what we have here.
How did we miss this? Our telescopes just didn't catch it.
Exactly. And then they'll go on and say, well, it's going to pass millions of miles away, so don't worry about it. It'll be another passing object. We've identified hundreds over the last few months, and that's what they're doing right now. They're just in a constant flow of information as far as all the different celestial bodies they're identifying now, so that this will just become one of the mix. It'll get lost in the horde of new planets and different objects that they're identifying out there. Oh, it's not going to hit us. Don't worry. It's going to pass right by. Which it will.
Yeah,
right by, but action and distance, if you look at the ecological evidence, it's going to wreak havoc on the surface of the planet.
For the first time in modern history, in the year 2001, sightings of Planet X were being openly reported. Three separate sightings from different locations on the planet reported it. The three observatories, one in South America, one in Switzerland, and one in Arizona. Here is only a report, just one of them, from Lowell Observatory in Arizona. I quote, April 4th, 2001, that was a Wednesday. Quote, the operator described the object as diffuse and of approximate magnitude 11. They number the magnitude of stars and things that they see. Of course, planets only reflect light that is sent out by stars. And so it is. They recorded seeing it. And then this was confirmed from Switzerland. The Neuchâtel Observatory saw it February 7th, the year 2001. So they know it's coming. For the better part of the 20th century, this was starting way back in the 1930s, astronomers have noticed what they technically term perturbations. I looked that word up in the unabridged dictionary. It means irregularities or wobbling of planets. That is very interesting to me that it said wobbling of planets. Why? Because the Bible also talks about the earth going out of its orbit and wobbling to and fro as a drunkard. I'll get to that in a moment. But anyway, it says this has been in the outermost planetary area, past Pluto, past Venus, not Venus, but Uranus and Neptune. Those are the three most distant planets, and all of them are now wobbling. And they came to the conclusion, even before they saw it, that something had such a strong magnetism or gravitational pull that it was causing these planets to wobble, irregularities in their rotation. So they knew that it had to be something out there, but it took time before they could actually see it. The modern telescopes that went out and probed the universe. But they have found archaeological evidence for a long time that there were shifts. They've actually found humans, their remains, animals that we call tropical animals. They have unearthed them in the last 10 years, since 1993, in the Arctic and the Antarctic. So they knew at one time the North and the South Pole were not the poles. They were tropics. How did it shift? And how did it become suddenly frozen? The only explanation is Planet X, that has an orbit that takes it between planet Earth and the Sun. When you turn back into ancient history and you put all the evidence in context with the Bible, you will find that there have been past civilizations. We knew it before the flood. It became so evil that God brought the flood upon the world. They were highly advanced because the fallen angels came down and claimed to be gods and dwelt among them. They showed them the entire solar system that we live in. They knew about this 10th planet. To be exact, a man by the name of Zachariah Sitchin from Great Britain. This man happens to not believe in God at all, but he is, I guess you would term, a New Ager, because he just believes in what happens, happens. But anyway, he is an archaeologist. He's an astronomer. He's all of these things packaged into one, and he has great social standing in the eyes of the scientific community in Britain. And he wrote a book years ago called The 12th Planet, in which he went into history and looked back, and they have unearthed, Britain has, their archaeological teams, writings from ancient civilizations called the Sumerians. And they had charts showing the entirety of the universe, and they had a 10th planet that you and I have never seen, because it hadn't even been close to planet Earth since the days of Peleg. Even historians of astronomy are aware of legends of so-called a star of doom that came by in ancient times. It created debris. It brought with it meteor showers. It brought with it upheavals of the land surface when it went by. In order to find out what changes that the Earth goes through, and when all of these changes actually begin, then you have to understand the passage of this great planet in its orbit closest to the Earth. Planet X, when it comes close enough to the Earth, and then we need to know the date when it'll arrive. This is based upon their dates, not mine. I can only report and then show that the Bible does predict these things, whether they're accurate or whether it'll be for yet a while. I do not know. Most of the time, they're accurate on these things. But then we can begin to see why Jesus Christ said, "Pray always that you will be counted worthy to escape all of these things that'll come to pass." We didn't understand the severity of all of these things at one time, but we need to know. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it all out once you have all the information laying in front of you. It's fairly easy to understand, but sweeping changes do occur every time this planet comes by. Every 3,600 years. And so it was since 1995, 96 year. Weather changes in the Earth have been very dramatic. We have seen, and we've always blamed it on the extremely low frequency magnetic wave generators by Russia and the United States. And that's a part of it. But they started. Weather conditions that have set all kind of record highs and record lows in some cases, but most of the time it's been highs. Because of what this is beginning to do at such a great distance, 4.7 billion miles yet from Pluto's orbit. And once it reaches Pluto's orbit, it'll be close to Earth, passing between the Earth and the Sun within 90 days. And so everybody on Earth will see this when it happens. Now, for some of us, this is a hard question, but do you remember back in the days when you were in grade school? Just barely, for some of us. We were taught back then about ice ages and so on, and how that they came after thousands and thousands of years it took for the ice to creep down from the North Pole. However, most researchers in astronomy and in archaeology, they all agree that some phenomenon has happened that caused it to be sudden, not gradual, but sudden. Otherwise, you could not have these big mammoths with this food in their mouth from the tropics, quick frozen. You just couldn't do it. There was a man which many of you have heard of, Pliny the Elder. He was a first century writer. He wrote, and I'm quoting from that same book, The Greatest Story Ever Told, page 78, "A terrible comet was seen by the people of Ethiopia and Egypt. It had a fiery appearance and twisted like a coil, and it was grim to behold. It was not really a star, so much as what might be called a ball of fire. It was not a fiery color, but a bloody red," end of quote. Now, what type of strange red celestial object could this man Pliny the Elder be describing? Another ancient Greek, returning from Egypt, said this, and I quote, "There appeared a comet, and there was a conflict between the forces of heaven and of earth." Now, what are the forces of heaven and earth? Gravitational pulls. The earth is held in its place by gravity, centrifugal force, the laws that God set in motion for the earth to rotate around the sun. This is our solar system. So what caused this devastation upon the earth? Apparently it'll happen again according to scriptures. And I've only read one so far today, or two.
Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words shall not pass away.
I'm John DiNardo for Planet X in Bible Prophecy. Your help is needed to warn of disastrous windstorms and floods, catastrophic earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, which God is bringing upon the world in order to shock people to open their hearts to God, our Savior, Yahshua Jesus. Please write to me at Planet X, P.O. Box 422, Towaco, T-O-W-A-C-O, New Jersey, 07082. I would be happy to hear from you. Planet X, P.O. Box 422, Towaco, T as in Tom, O-W-A-C-O, New Jersey, 07082.